Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello, and a heartfelt greeting to you. This is episode number 68 of the Free Cities Podcast. Well, today I've got my final Bitcoin Film Festival dispatch for you. I'm talking with a gentleman by the name of Toma Cantor, who is the director of the film Bond to Unbind. Now, Toma's film is a pretty deep dive into the fascinating contemporary story of the country of El Salvador, spearheaded by its phenomenally popular president, Nayib Bukele. El Salvador took the bold approach of not only passing the world's first ever Bitcoin legal tender bill back in 2021, but also actively rallying against El Salvador's traditional relationship with the IMF, including ignoring their pleas to rescind the law, or in the words of Fortune magazine, I quote, "The International Monetary Fund's board urged El Salvador to strip Bitcoin of its status as legal currency due to its large risks, highlighting a major obstacle for the nation's efforts to get a loan from the institution." Obviously, do what we say or you can't get a loan from us. Anyway, they didn't seem too overly bothered about those threats, and in fact, El Salvador's so-called volcano bonds, which are the government's Bitcoin-backed bonds, also got regulatory approval at the end of last year. And that is something I would say is probably yet another nail in the coffin of their relationship with the IMF. Anyway, we discuss all this in the pod, as well as talking about both of our personal experiences in the country since the law was passed. I've been there a couple of times and Toma spent a fair bit of time there making the film. Next week, I'm off to Dubai to start making our film about the history of special economic zones. And while I'm there, of course, I'll also be recording some new podcasts. So look out for those in the coming weeks. And don't forget, I say this every week, but I really mean it as always, just sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Toma Cantor. I rewatched the film first thing this morning, so it's fresh in my mind. And like I say, watching it, I got a lot of FOMO, so did Peter, about getting back out there. What it helps to do a film like that is put it all back into context again. And you kind of look back at it and you see it as a historical event more, I think. And I think we're kind of, if you're a Bitcoiner, you're already used to El Salvador and what's happening. And a lot of Bitcoiners have been there now and seen it for themselves. But it's what I like about your film is there's a little bit of the history, and a lot of people talking on the film who seem to know exactly what they're talking about. So can I ask first, did you go out there with a storyboard? Or
No. Actually, that might actually spark our conversation. When I went to El Salvador, I went to try and find the catch. What's really happening there? What's this Bukele dictator is actually doing there? And I went in there to ask tough questions about Bukele. Took me about a week to change my mind. Realized that's not really the story. The people love him. They adore him. He's a rock star, you know. This maybe that could be a different topic that we can talk about later. With the problematic of rockstar president. About third or fourth day into recording, I said, you know what, that's not interesting. This is just some Western bullshit that people are like telling me about how other people. So it took me about 3 or 4 days to realize that Bukele is not the story. The people love Bukele. And let's forget about the brainwashing that we have here in the West about what's going on there, and concentrate about what we're really here for, which is how is this Bitcoin thing going to help the poor people of El Salvador? So I just went straight into that, and I was trying to go. I didn't really film inside. Once I figured that out, I went out of San Salvador. I wasn't recording in San Salvador anymore. I went to Ataco, and we went to Pacha. Sorry, it's been a couple of years. I don't remember the names. And we went to a few places. And also, the final cut of the film didn't have any business people or any non-Salvadorian people. I was trying to distill it to just having the voices of the people that are actually there. They were born there. They're from there. They'll be there after the foreigners go, and they need to use it. And
that makes it stand out from. I mean, I'm used to watching films about Bitcoin, or you know, loosely speaking around Bitcoin, and it was quite refreshing to not see any Bitcoiners talk about El Salvador.
Yeah, and I recorded a lot of that. I just none of it made like it's like you're saying. I went through it and I was like, why would anyone want to watch that? I mean, we have so much footage or so much content with those people already out there. And that wasn't my plan at all when I got there. I thought I'm going to go and see journalists. I mean, my first interviews were with lawyers and journalists talking about Bukele.
I noticed you didn't. I was surprised, actually. I wondered when I was watching it the first time whether it would actually have an interview with Bukele.
No,
Did you try, or was no, that I you just decided not to?
I didn't try. I didn't think that. I was trying to. I guess my love for documentaries is about the truth, and I'm looking for truth, and I'm looking to not put any lipstick or on anything. So I didn't want an official or someone that will give me the statements that I wanted to speak to people that might actually end up using it to improve their lives. And I found them really, really easily, and a lot of them, you know, and they were very happy to speak.
Well, I mean, that's why I'm interested in this film, because, you know, Free Cities Foundation, we're all about parallel systems, what happens in a parallel system. And I think we often look at El Salvador and see it as a bit of an experiment. It's a small country. It's a small place. Adopting Bitcoin, hopefully for the better, and as far as we can see at the moment, it seems to be having quite a number of effects on the country. Some obvious, some have come as a result of the original things you thought, and a bit less obvious to the eye. But can we start with talking about your film? The subtitle of your film is exploring the relationship between the US dollar and El Salvador. And now that is really interesting. And I think, like, tell me something about El Salvador's relationship with the US dollar.
Okay. So no one likes it. Not one person that I spoke with had anything good to say about it. Honestly, all levels from...
I was going to say, maybe I'm just thinking, people listening to this, give a really brief history of their relationship
in 2001, just between the Bush and Clinton administration, there was a push from, I'm not going to give you the propaganda, but the official story is that in 2001, in January, 20 years before the Bitcoin adoption, El Salvador had a very quick blitz, much like the transfer to Bitcoin, of just dollarizing and getting rid of the colones. Colones was the Salvadoran coin before. Now, you can think that a lot of countries around El Salvador since 2000 had terrible inflation. So you can take the economist kind of version of things and say it was good for them because they didn't suffer that inflation. But it wasn't good for their morale. They took their money away. They stopped, like the little that they trusted the government just disappeared overnight. Prices went up. I mean, similar to what happened in the Netherlands, when they started using the euro also, they woke up in the morning for like everything is 35% up. But those are poor people, really. And then, you know, you speak to people there and it's the same stories and they come back after another. And you know that it's so true because everyone's telling you the same story and it's the same details as well. It's like we couldn't afford tomatoes anymore. So people really dislike the dollar. People believe that countries around suffered crazy inflation in those 20 years that maybe they didn't suffer as much in El Salvador. But every person I spoke with would rather suffer their own inflation than be, don't know, what was the Biden thing? They're the backyard, you know? El Salvador is our backyard, you know?
I like the way that you used that as a way of explaining what the film was about, rather than bond to unbind, you know, Bitcoin in El Salvador or something. You know, calling it exploring the relationship between the US dollar and El Salvador is, I think, is a much better way of explaining it in the context of the actual people that were involved in it. I think, you know, people often look at El Salvador and it's as outsiders looking in. And if you're an outsider looking in, you can miss that one. You can miss that aspect of it, the whole US dollar thing. Because you just see, Bitcoin's being adopted, and then you just go off on this tangent of what Bitcoin can do rather than what's already happened there. And I think it's hugely important in the context of Bitcoin because, like you say, essentially, Bitcoin was enforced in exactly the same way. And if you don't know about the history of the US dollar, you're not going to understand what people are going to go through when they see something like that happen.
And it's correct, and that's something that almost every person mentioned to me while I was recording the interviews, the people that didn't know Bitcoin, and I was trying to find as many people that didn't know Bitcoin, every single one of them, like similar answers between so many people that I was amazed by that. I really thought that I found the truth, you know, it's like everyone's telling me the same story, it must be the truth. And everyone despised the US dollar, but are really afraid of Bitcoin because they all lived through the dollarization. And now they live through the Bitcoinization and they all feel like it's exactly the same thing. So everyone's afraid that they're going to push the dollar out of circulation and all their life savings going to go away overnight. So
did you, when did you actually finish filming this?
I was there for the conference. So that was in November. And I stayed for 2 weeks and just traveled afterwards.
So it was
2021,
right. Yeah, I was there then as well. Okay, so let's go back to the period of dollarization. Firstly, like I'm going to sound really stupid here, but can you explain to me why prices go up just because you dollarize?
Because they started, I'll give you the see if I remember the numbers on the one example that every person said to me. So a kilo of tomatoes used to cost 5 colones and $1 was worth, say, I think they used to say 8 or 9 colones. So overnight it went from 5 to 8 to 9. Just like that, there was no inflation involved. They just started pricing it in dollars, and they did the conversion straight to colones. Sounds silly, but that's.
But hold a minute. So, but if it was worth 5 colones, is it because they didn't have any denominations under $1?
I don't think so. I never really questioned that. I don't think so.
I didn't understand that. I'm sure.
I found it difficult. Now thinking about it, I found it difficult to understand why they had to do it like that. But you know what? The stories from Europe with the euro are exactly the same, that overnight they just started denominating everything in euro and prices went up 20, 30, 40%. It sounds stupid. I agree with you. I don't have a way to explain why they did it like that.
Well, I mean, I would have assumed that in the case of the euro, if your country adopts the euro, then people coming in spending euros are going to cause the price to go up because they're used to a higher price, and suddenly they're paying in there. You know. But I can't imagine it would happen so quickly. It's just something I didn't understand, other than because I would have thought, right, if a bag of tomatoes costs five colones, and then in the new system that would be 70 cents or 60 cents.
And it went straight to $1. So, and everyone would, literally every person, when I would start asking about the dollarization, everyone gave me the five colones to $1 conversion on the tomatoes, right? So.
Right. Well, I'm gonna look that one
up. It's worth researching.
I'm gonna look it up.
I
will put it in the show notes or in the introduction as to why that's true, because it didn't make any sense to me. Okay, so what else? What talk about some of the other downsides of the dollarization? You know, that you heard from people in the country.
The real downside was that they changed the money without asking the people. They literally didn't ask anyone. Not to say that Bukele asked too many people before he brought Bitcoin on, but he didn't get rid of the dollar, right? They got rid of that. They did it, if I remember correctly, they didn't do it overnight either. They said that the colones will just stay with the dollars and then just slowly rolled it off, which is exactly what the people are afraid of, or were afraid of 2 years ago, that Bukele will do with the dollar, that he will do that. He will say, like, don't worry, dollar is here for good, and then slowly start rolling it off. So I won't blame him if he does it. But that people are really afraid of that.
I think, well, that in this day and age, that might be harder since there are so many on and off ramps with the dollar digitally. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine there's a necessity for it either. If you think about it, you know, I've spent time in El Salvador, Strike, Chivo wallet, all these wallets. Mm-hmm. It's seamless changing from dollars to Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and the dollar is useful, obviously. Especially if people are sending you dollars, or you're denominating in dollars with your friends and cousins, and I don't know, living in America. But I should imagine it's too easy to swap between the two now. People may choose to live on a Bitcoin standard eventually, but in my experience, and I'm sure you discovered this as well, you know, the volatility of the price of Bitcoin is something that turns people off that.
If you don't like being bipolar, then yeah.
Well, I lived there for a while, and I quite well. I went there thinking, you know, this is great. People are using Bitcoin, and when I left, I realized most of the people I was transacting with were using the Bitcoin network, but were receiving dollars. Mm-hmm. And I get that. You know, that's happened to me now. Even in the UK, I've onboarded some meat producers where I live. Uh-huh. And they started just receiving dollars over the network.
I live in the UK. I'd like to have the link for the
meat. It's one of my neighbors. You can buy beef, red ruby beef, Bitcoin.
I'd like to know that. Yeah.
But the interesting thing, Kate's her name, she's a farmer, lives near where I live. What's interesting is she began, like, I told her about Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And I saw the same thing in El Salvador. So I told her about Bitcoin. She's interesting because she's an intelligent woman and she's interested in things like that. And she faces problems as a meat producer. She has to sell to the supermarkets. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't want to. She wants to sell to locals. I said, look, I know a lot of people who love meat, aka Bitcoiners. It's a bit of the subculture. It's quite a beef-oriented subculture. I said, and regardless of whether you understand what Bitcoin is, I said, if you start accepting Bitcoin, you'll almost certainly tap into a brand new market. She said, cool, let's go for it. So I set her up with the ability to receive Bitcoin, but she took it all instantly exchanged into pounds. Mm-hmm. And I was cool with that because I'd spent so much time in El Salvador and saw exactly the same thing. Anyway, within a month, I got the first sort of text saying, so how do I keep the Bitcoin? You know, and now she's stacking. So she's got her clients that pay her directly and then the ones where she goes through a payment processor where she keeps some pounds, because you know she's running a business in pounds. You can't just suddenly just accept all Bitcoin. But and I think that's the adoption process.
Do you remember when BitPay came about in 2000? Well, not when they came around. When I first installed the BitPay plugin in 2013 on my WordPress site, they had the slider, if you remember, to go between 0 to 100. How much Bitcoin would you like to keep compared to the fiat, you know? And I remember myself just pushing it up like every day, like
a bit more and a bit more. Well, you see, I think that how adoption works, especially in a place like El Salvador, is you begin by using Bitcoin because it's convenient. Mm-hmm. And that's the payment rails. That's not Bitcoin the asset itself. That's the payment rails. What's convenient for you probably in the beginning is keeping US dollars, because not everyone's using Bitcoin. And then slowly but surely it almost requires that you live through one sort of parabolic rise in the price of Bitcoin as well.
Yeah.
Because that gives you the understanding that to save in Bitcoin, you need to think much longer term. You can't put it, you know, you can't save in Bitcoin and then expect to liquidate some of it a few months later, because the price could be almost anything at that point, you know.
So do you remember, I totally agree. And on that note, when Bukele rolled the whole Bitcoin thing in El Salvador, he gave each citizen $30 worth of Bitcoin. So I asked every taxi driver, every supermarket worker, everyone that does those type of jobs, I've asked them, what have you done with your third? People working on the coffee farm, I've asked all what you would consider the working class, what have you done with your $30 worth of Bitcoin? And I'd say about half of them kept them, you know. And they had a really good, the reason is Bukele is a clever guy. He probably knows what he's doing. $30, I can keep it as a... So, you know, some taxi drivers, they had a deal that if you pay with Bitcoin, I don't know if it's still around. When we were there, it was around, you got, I think it was 10% off at the pump. So some taxi drivers were using it to get a discount at the pump. So... sorry, I don't know how we got there, but
adoption.
The $30, I would say that at least half the people I spoke with kept the $30, and they were writing it down. So I'm hoping for them that the mood is changing now.
Well, interestingly, I was chatting with another filmmaker about this yesterday, who was filming in Venezuela. The Bitcoin story, Aaron, and he, Human B. There's some parts of Human B, which are filmed in Venezuela, and he compared and contrasts El Salvador and Venezuela as being bottom up versus top down. So El Salvador was a top down implementation of Bitcoin, whereas Venezuela, with its hyperinflation, was bottom up. And I was actually surprised. I haven't looked into Venezuela much, but there is in the film you see it a lot of people, you know, being forced or it's needing Bitcoin, whereas in El Salvador it's less so. I mean, obviously the remittance thing in El Salvador is huge, but they're not fighting hyperinflation, and I think they're both relevant. Personally, I think the one that works long term, and I would say this is how El Salvador continues as well, is the bottom up version. You need to be incentivized to use Bitcoin. If it's not hyperinflation, it might just be ease. And I think in the digital world, ease will be the winner for many people. Having lived in El Salvador, being able to pay on the Lightning Network was much easier than my other option.
Absolutely.
My only other option really was cash. And you know how difficult it is to find a cash machine in El Salvador. If you go out in the countryside, they just don't exist. You know?
It was easier for me to buy a beer for sats than looking for an ATM at 4 o'clock in the morning. Yes. I arrived and I was like, I want a beer, and I didn't have any cash. So I was just like, can I sap you some sats? Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think you're right. And I also think that there's obviously the remittance the remittances, which I don't know the exact figures for the remittances, to be honest. I know that there is a lot of it going on. Obviously, there is a massive Salvadoran diaspora, but I don't really know the numbers there. And I know Chivo has improved a lot, but when I was in El Salvador, I wasn't really liking the interface. I do know that they've changed a lot of stuff there, and they listen to people. This is something that is very important. But you say it's a top-down environment or adoption cycle, but the administration in El Salvador listens to Bitcoiners, where the administration of any other country around the world will do opposite of what Bitcoiners will say to them. So in essence, you got this political environment now in El Salvador that Bukele has 90% of the vote. Now that's obviously not healthy. And people look at him as a superstar, right? Also not healthy. The opposition to Bukele will not come from non-Bitcoiners, because he doesn't listen to non-Bitcoiners. And for better or worse, it seems like he knows what he's doing, but he's not taking kindly to anyone besides Bitcoiners. And when Bitcoiners criticize different Salvadoran moves or different Bukele moves, he actually addresses it, and he doesn't address, he trolls everyone else, right? So he knows that he needs the Bitcoiners next to him. Yeah. And the opposition to Bukele will come through the Bitcoiners because they have money. They have the ear of the administration, and the locals have realized that. So what I've noticed is that local people will take points that they read on Twitter from foreigners talking about what's happening in El Salvador, raise those issues up, saying, look, the rest of the world is saying it. And it's not the rest of the world that Bukele likes trolling. It's the rest of the world that Bukele likes. So I find it as a very interesting point that I'm got to really be, I mean, if it wouldn't be for Bitcoin and Bitcoiners, I think that the administration in El Salvador could potentially gain too much power.
What do you think? Like, I know you never got to interview him, but what's your take on Bukele? Why is he, like, Bitcoiners understand the Bitcoin thing.
Sorry, go on.
You know what I mean? Like, so if you're a Bitcoiner and you've gone heavily into the whole Bitcoin world, you understand why. You understand the whys of it. And you would look at someone like Bukele and just assume the same thing. But there's always that suspicion of somebody in a position of power as well. So what's your take?
Do you know Bukele's story? His father?
Tell me. I know what I heard, but tell me what you know. Go on.
Remember the film Coming to America with Eddie Murphy?
Yes.
With the fake McDonald's?
Yes.
That's kind of Bukele's father's story. So he had the right... And look, this is just me reading and researching and speaking to local Salvadorians. And it's also been a couple of years. So if I'm making any mistakes, it's not on purpose. I'm just trying to remember the story. In the 1970s, pre-Civil War in El Salvador, Bukele's father, which unfortunately or fortunately had to leave the Palestinian authorities because of Israeli aggression, and it was fortunate enough to have the money to get out. They went to Salvador, and he buys the franchise to McDonald's. Civil War breaks out. He still keeps the McDonald's, even though, you know, it's like he's this communist fighting Yankee restaurants, and he's still standing up for it. Civil War ends in the 90s, and McDonald's pretty much tell him to F off. After he stood for them for... So...
Why? Do you know why?
I don't really remember. But it all seems very... I don't know if I want to say... Kafkaesque or Machiavelli. Like, it's just not... you read it and it doesn't make any sense, you know? Like, they come on him for not having the right branding on the napkins and stuff like that, you know? after he's been standing for them. He was their man.
They were nitpicking, so yeah. There was obviously some other...
And I went further to research. I was like, I got to find information about this. So I went through my... let's go. I tried all the web searches I could. So I even did WikiLeaks, right? So I went on the WikiLeaks site and I put El Salvador. The only thing that comes up is Bukele's father and his McDonald's stuff and the McDonald's CEO and the American ambassador in El Salvador trying to get rid of him. Like, not get rid of him, like eliminate him, but get the franchise back or get the rights for the franchise away from him. So Bukele grows up in... To my understanding, I never spoke with the person. I'm not trying to read anyone's mind, but I think that he grows up with some sort of deep hatred towards...
And a vendetta.
A vendetta, which... vendetta is a bit further out. Maybe, possibly. I think he's a really clever person to run his life based on vendettas, but he grows up understanding that the Yangs are trying to steal his father's business. Then he moves to the FMLN, right? So his political university, Bukele's political university, is from the communists. You know, the first 10 years in politics, his first 10 years taking him from a nightclub owner and a marketing person into the mayor, becoming the mayor of San Salvador. This is all learning through the Venezuelans and through the communists. So I don't think he really wants to please the American administration in any shape or form. I don't think it has... It definitely... I would imagine that... Sorry, I don't want to say anything. Like, I don't want to say anything that I should...
Like, I'm fully aware that a lot of this is stuff we read, we work out. We're not, you know, no one's listening here thinking this is the definitive truth.
Yeah. So
think out loud.
So I that was my starting point. He grew up in a house that was very wealthy and didn't take kindly to the Americans, not because they've done, from what my understanding, they've not done anything. They were getting screwed. And then he gets into politics, real communists that show him the ropes. And then he goes against people in the FMLN for corruption, and he starts his own new ideas party, and I think he takes some of the Venezuelans from the FMLN into his new party.
I didn't know he started as on the left. I didn't know that.
Not just the left.
Yeah, the far left.
I mean, I don't know what you would consider left, but not like Senate Democrat or Labour Party left. Like
no,
guerrilla
I meant
left,
socialist.
You know? Yeah, no, they're real. Like And you see, you can read it, it's online everywhere. During the Civil War, the FMLN was taking over his father's restaurants and claiming them, saying, what is this? This is like owned by Yangs. And that's how he grows up, that's what he sees.
And he went to work for that party? Or he went to...
His political college, university, whatever you want to say, the first 10 years is with them.
Huh.
So his tactics or how he frames, I guess it's been a long time since, so I guess he's grown out of it or grown from there, progressed from there, but that's his university of how we do things around here.
Something else that I had never heard before I watched your film was that Bukele was earmarking El Salvador to be the sort of new Singapore. The Singapore of Central America, say. I'd never heard that one before. Is that for real, you know?
I don't know if it's for real. It felt, coming to El Salvador, trying to learn the history of Salvador, the dollarization, and Bukele, really reminded me of reading about Singapore in the 60s. I was like, fuck, this is the same. This sounds exactly the same. They're joining up with the communists. Soon they're going to throw the communists in prison. And then, it's slowly becoming very much the same. So I kept saying to everyone, Singapore, Singapore, Singapore. I spoke to one lady in the film. She was Bukele's tech advisor. And I said, do you see the similarities, the parallels with Singapore? And Jesus went on saying, yeah. And Bukele himself says that, you know. And she even, if I quote her from the film, she even says he wrote a tweet just saying the word Singapore.
Yes. I don't remember that, but that may have been before I was following him.
It was around the time of the conference in 2021 that he sent that tweet out. I see parallels with Singapore. I'll go even one step further and I'll say Singapore, if it wasn't for China, couldn't do what they did. And I think that El Salvador, if it wasn't for China, couldn't do what they did. This is, again, this is my assumption. It's not, no one will tell you these things, but I don't think that you could execute what's being done in El Salvador without having the backing of some sort of massive power behind you. And it's, I don't think that it's coming from America.
Well, also, I mean, what's most fascinating, I think, for me about the whole situation is the idea that they're issuing now, well, they will be shortly issuing volcano bonds to fund development rather than going to the IMF and getting a loan which has so many strings attached to it, which basically means they're trapped.
Yeah.
And that's the major move for me, because at the time of your film, I think that's when they were first talking about volcano bonds.
Right. So you asked me before if I had any idea what I want to, what my film should be about before landing in El Salvador. And I said, obviously, Bukele. But by far, the bond is the most interesting technological update that got me excited since discovering Bitcoin. I didn't get excited about anything, about changing real issues in the world, like issuing a Bitcoin-backed bond to pay back your debt to the IMF. I mean, it's like, I get goosebumps just thinking about it. Like, I think that every country in the world will follow after that.
Well, and now we're seeing, I think they've just announced the dates they're going to actually start issuing them. Is that right?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like I say, when you recorded, it was just announced. Yeah,
there's a lot of legislation that needs to go through in order for it to become legal. I don't know if they're done with that, but I know they're working on it.
I saw somebody mention recently, and I don't know what it was. There was a date. But, I mean, the implications of that are astonishing. And it's for me, it's the continuation of the you mentioned it's sort of anti-America. I think it's more like anti-establishment slant of Bukele. He doesn't like the dollar. He doesn't like the IMF. He doesn't like the system in general. And actually, I think it's astonishing. And like you say, if it pays off, I mean, what we're seeing so far is it's paying off. You know, the adoption of Bitcoin's paid off in a number of ways, not least in attracting the world. It's impossible to meet people in El Salvador who don't say that the change has been for the better.
He gave them life, you know. He really gave a lot of people life there.
So let's talk about something that happened recently with Bukele then that was a bit shocking, which was the videos of inmates in the jails who are all former gang members who've been basically rounded up and put in jail.
Very harsh to see.
Right, so come on, talk to me about that then. As someone, and this is Bukele all over, isn't it? You know, he does what he wants. He appears to have a good heart, I think. I mean, and
he releases very good content online.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
That forwards the agenda.
Yeah.
And that was one of those things. I mean, the footage of sort of inmates with covered in tattoos with their heads down being ushered around prisons was hugely powerful to see.
Yeah.
So how did you feel about that as someone who sees the benefit happening in El Salvador?
Very mixed feelings. On the one hand, it's like, what's stopping him from doing it to any protester in the street who's saying, we don't like what you're doing? Honestly, I don't know what could stop him. And on the other hand, you couldn't do what he's done there in terms of freeing the people economically without doing that. Now, I'm not, and there are a few different ways to look at it. You can look at it from being your own bank and being afraid to go on the bus. Doesn't really work together, you know, like people were afraid to go on the bus to school, you know. Then what's the point of keeping a USB or a passphrase with you when someone can shoot you at any moment or grab your money at any moment, like anywhere you go? One. Two, of course, the IMF or the you know, I'd say the IMF or the World Bank, I guess it's the same entity really. They would never allow for something like this to happen. It had to happen quick, sharp, and he had to really show that he doesn't care about what they say. Like, he really needed to stand strong. Being liberal, no one will ever allow you to do what he did there with Bitcoin. Being liberal might be nicer to some people, but you're not going to get any change then, for better or worse. It's hard to...
What about using the barometer of the local population? You spoke to a lot of locals, and that's the kind of crux of the film, is it's talking to real people.
They're 100% behind him, which is what makes me, as hard as it is to watch it, I have to keep reminding myself that every single person I spoke with, besides one person... I'm not going to mention names. Two people that you could say are getting their salaries from people that would like to see Bukele out of position. Honestly, besides those two, everyone's praising him for doing it. And they're like, they have smiles on their faces when it's really fucking hard to see because it's like, it's. I'm not downgrading the. You know, gang members or criminals or whatever. I'm not saying that what they did was all right, but my problem with it is what's going to stop him from doing it against someone who's protesting against him in the future. And that brings me back to what I was saying about Bitcoin, that the only opposition to Bukele will come through Bitcoin. He will never be able to do that to Bitcoin people because that's his crowd. And he listens. I mean... There are some Bitcoiners, again, not mentioning names, that are very critical about his moves in El Salvador, Bukele's move. And he listens. He honestly listens, you know. He's got advisors in administrations that read Twitter constantly to. So it's hard to watch the footage. Calling him a dictator and saying that what he does is going, is against this and against that, is not going to make him do anything besides even show the world that he doesn't give a fuck even more. But when Bitcoiners jump in and they start asking questions, he needs to satisfy his own crowd by answering those questions, right? They just started a Bitcoin office in El Salvador. Stacey Herbert is the gatekeeper. I feel for her for doing it. You know, she's going to have a lot of people telling her she's doing stuff wrong just because of that, but she's agreed, I guess, to become the gatekeeper for the Bitcoin office. Stacey seems to be a very big believer in Bukele.
Understatement.
But at the same time, I don't think that she will, that you want when it comes to... So if you are a Bitcoin company and you want to enter El Salvador nowadays, you go through Stacey. Like, she's honestly, he made her the gatekeeper. I think that she will think about the benefits of Bitcoin before she thinks about how to keep Bukele in power in ways that are not ethical. I believe that. I don't see her position not doing that, you know? And that's how... Through Stacey Herbert, the opposition to Bukele will come. It seems very counter. As much as she shows all this love towards him and Max as well, they appreciate him. He gave them a citizenship. They're like rock stars in El Salvador. I think that the opposition to Bukele will actually come through Max and Stacey, not directly, but because of their influence.
I suppose another way of looking at the Bukele situation is in trying to create an alternative. Like, I've yet to have an. I couldn't argue on any alternative, really. I can't even think of what if I was in a position where gang culture was that rife. I'm not sure I know how to deal with it any other way. Do you?
No, it's hard to see the footage, but I agree with Bukele almost on every single thing that he says and does. It's almost amazing for me that I've never had any politician that I would read what they say and think I'd probably do the same thing. I've never had that in my life. So for me, this is new too. I think he's really a rock star in what he does. But
yeah, but that's literally classic. Like, the classic trap of
I know. That's why
I'm not saying he is or he isn't, because I'm in the same boat as you. I'm always suspicious of people in power, and I think it's because if I look at myself, I don't tend towards powerful positions. I'm the opposite. I tend towards everyone being empowered, and you could argue that about Bukele as well. He according to my thought process, he is trying to empower everyone in his country. Really?
He is.
Right.
And the word also to back up what you're saying now, that I was very critical of Chivo Wallet in the beginning, and the word is that the Bitcoin office, maybe by the help of Stacy, maybe it comes from above, I don't know how it works, is being critical on teaching local Salvadorians. Education is their number one focus, and self-sovereignty, and not just keeping your kids in Chivo, is like their number one mission, right? So he's doing it right, you know? Mm. He's really like, he's listened. He had to roll this wallet for 6 million users, and it was the biggest. The stories I heard about getting Chivo live for the day of the $30, everyone say it was a miracle. No one thought it's going to happen. And it was super buggy. And people were losing money. He made everyone whole. And he fixed all the issues that all the Bitcoiners were complaining about. So, and it's not that they argue against it like some sort of Bitcoin company. They say thank you and they go straight to fix it. You know, it's like, it's good. Some things are really good, you know.
Maybe I think only with the benefit of hindsight would we, and I'm talking about quite a few years in the future, will we know what the hell is going on. Because as someone who believes in Bitcoin myself, I see every move Bukele's making as honest, obviously. I'm not a powerful politician, though, and I don't aspire to be and never would want to be. So I don't know what goes on inside a human being at that level with regards to those things.
I agree. And that can take me back to what we don't know, but it's hard for me to believe that there's no big entity that is backing Bukele up to be able to do what he's doing. I just find it, I mean, maybe I'm too pragmatic in that sense. You know, I'm like, in my opinion, it can only be China. But we don't know that. And maybe, like you're saying, in hindsight, we're going to see a massive Chinese influx in El Salvador, which I'm not saying, I don't have any opinion about good or bad. I'm just saying that dirty politics, that's the only way that I see for us to experience Bukele becoming a superpower tyrant or whatever, which I don't think he will be, but I'm not going to put money on it.
You mentioned actually when we were coming up here in the lift, you mentioned that you would quite like to live there. Is that true?
I'd love to.
I mean, that's pretty strong words for someone who's also a little bit skeptical as well, you know.
Yeah, I think that it's important for Bitcoiners to go and spend time there and live there, because if you want to maintain this economic freedom, you have to build some sort of opposition to Bukele. And the opposition will not come from the Salvadorians. I mean, it will come from the Salvadorians, but with the Bitcoiner money. Or the Bitcoiner, yeah, money would be a good way to describe it, I guess.
So describe that opposition then. Like what form of opposition do you feel you need, or do you just mean?
Just so we don't go to that point that locals start seeing that he's overusing his power. I'm not saying replace him. I don't think there's someone better. I don't see someone better. I don't see someone doing things differently. I just don't want him to get to that point.
Okay, then. So sum it up then, the whole situation. I'm guessing you see it as a net positive. I'm more certain you do. What's your general feeling about the whole situation as a everything, the governance model, the Bitcoin thing, you know, what's happening there, what you saw with your own eyes?
So there's a lot of marketing involved, right? This is for an outsider eyes. Inside, they don't really have that. Do you know my first Bitcoin?
Yes, of course. I have interviewed John Dennehy for this podcast.
So John's work and Carlino and those guys, they'll work. Sorry, I'm not mentioning enough names, and I'm not like there's so many people involved in that project, which also helped me with my project a lot. So that's the most important thing right now in El Salvador, you know. And
you mean the education.
Education, and not just education. There you go, use Chivo. Education, how to use Bitcoin, you know. How to really use Bitcoin, and they're the only ones doing it. And I think they're going to kick ass. The kids in El Salvador are going to kick ass in 20 years' time. There's going to be so many kids that will understand Bitcoin better than the rest of the world there. It's just going to be amazing.
I know what you mean, because I studied Bitcoin for years, and then when I started using it on a daily basis, I went on this absolutely parabolic learning curve. And some crazy simple things that had completely missed, that I'd missed just being a Bitcoiner from afar, you know. And so I agree with you on that sense. When I was there, I went and looked into the education program. We went to a graduation ceremony and you know.
Oh, you went to the My First Bitcoin graduation?
Yes. Nice. And I mean, of course I'm positive about seeing that. I know that feeling. I try and teach my kids about Bitcoin all the time. It's not an easy subject to get your head around. But I agree that understanding the why of Bitcoin when you're young, if it's possible, is a very good way of promoting adoption.
And it might go back to what you were saying, which is the necessity of it, which... you couldn't use PayPal in El Salvador. So they didn't have any rails out of the country. They had to have a family or a friend who is Salvadorian living in the US to do the transactions for them, right?
Yeah.
That's how they did online commerce.
And I think somebody mentioned in the film that they would send it to someone and then they would send it by
Western Union. So he would end up losing 25% of his paycheck just on conversions.
I know, and now it's actually free now. If you use the Bitcoin network rails, it's free to convert Bitcoin into US dollars in country as well, isn't it? In the Chivo app. I don't think they charge a fee.
They don't know what it's like now.
No, they didn't the last time I was there. So if you are somebody in America sending money home, it's completely free now.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely free. That is quite astonishing when you think about having to do two hops to a friend and then into Western Union to get it in.
Yeah, the problem is now getting the Bitcoin in the US, right? This is what... that's the problem that I hear about.
I know, but I mean someone earning money in the US. Someone, an El Salvadorian sending money home to their family, for example, earning US dollars, pinging them back literally instantaneously, saying, here you go. Pops up in a wallet on the beach in El Tunco, and you can have dollars or Bitcoin or whatever. It's dollars and Bitcoin. It's up to you. I mean, that's miraculous. For some, I can imagine, for some, even for me when I think about that, being able to spend without having to draw cash out the bank, I thought that was a miraculous. But yeah, the actual experience of somebody who you know, is living there. And I can't imagine that won't grow.
No, it's going to grow. I mean, it's I mean, I was buying raw cacao beans that would cost $1 on the side of the road for on the Lightning Network. When that was just the early days for them, right? Some mama with her kids is like, yeah, Lightning Network. Okay, let's go.
Yeah. I know. Well, like I say, I was watching your film this morning, and I was getting FOMO, wanting to go back.
Yeah, I know.
Because when you move away, when you're there, you really feel something happening. You see everyone excitable. There's that feeling of something happening, something change. You know, people are coming home. People talk to you in a supermarket and just say, oh, you know, what are you here for? Like, I was there with my kids. So people were like, what? You know, the beginning, it's like, why are your kids here? And then after the end of it, it's just like people were just accepting that, okay, people are starting to come here on holiday, mm-hmm. or you know, it was unheard of the year before. Mm-hmm. Nobody went there. Mm-hmm. A few intrepid travelers went there, and that was about it. But the hope is palpable. And like I say, one day, I just, every time I say anything about El Salvador, I always get that feeling afterwards that, am I going to eat my words one day? Mm-hmm. Am I going to have to absolutely eat my words? Because it all seems a little bit too good, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That it's a funny feeling. I don't want to end on a feeling like that. But you're obviously optimistic, let's say, about...
I'm very optimistic. I think I honestly convinced that Central America will bring us this Bitcoin revolution that we've been talking about. I mean, I used to go to Eastern Africa. I did a bunch of Bitcoin stuff in Kenya. I used to think Kenya might be the place. Spent a long time there. No, the Central American people are so much more ready. They just want to drop the dollar so badly. They want to get rid of it. I don't know. My next trip, I'm going to try and do Honduras. I really want to go to Prospera, but no, I really fell in love with the people and the country and their mentality to the point that I'm afraid I'm going to eat my words as well one day, but I don't see it happening.
Well, arguably, the part of it that makes me uncomfortable is the centralized part. Mm-hmm. You know, the governmental side of it, the top-down side of it. The rest of it, you know, it's an opt-in system on the whole. I mean, I know that it's mandated in El Salvador, but... most of the country's not using it. You know, it's like, I don't know what the actual amount is now, but I'm guessing it's 25% places, less probably, where you can actually spend. And no one's enforcing this thing. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it's an opt-in system. And so if we all end up eating our words, so be it. No one held a gun to my head and told me to use Bitcoin. That has been my experience with everyone I've met, including Salvadorian pupusa ladies. If it works, we'll use it. And if we get burnt, it's because we understand what we're doing and something went wrong that we didn't anticipate would go wrong. But I don't see an alternative, and I just don't see an alternative. You know, a solution that profound has never presented itself to me before.
I'm with you in the same boat.
Right. Well, I've got a last question. Actually, before I ask my last question, have you got a new project that you're interested in? I noticed you just mentioned Prospera.
I have Prospera, and then there's the guys in Praia Brasil that I would like to go and visit.
What's that one, Praia Brasil?
They're trying to do a Bitcoin beach type project in. I'll show you afterwards. Yeah. So there's that. I'd really like to visit and do some filming in Venezuela. It's definitely going to be around that bit of the world.
How much do you know about the Free Cities idea movement?
I'm just spending a night and dinner with Veronica, really.
And what's your opinion?
I'm all for it. I mean,
and do you see similarities between El Salvador and that concept?
No.
Because it's a small country. I see. Go on.
Again, I would obviously have to read more literature about different free cities because I've only ever read about Liberland. I just don't see it taking off. I don't see how a big administration is not going to step on it the moment that it gets the tiniest wings, you know?
True. I mean, I think currently the network of free cities is on a spectrum as well. And even at the sharpest end of the wedge, I think Prosper is one of those. It's a regulatory jurisdiction. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's an economic zone. Mm-hmm. It still answers to the Honduran government, of course. But the government are incentivized to back.
Yeah, but this is, you know, so Castro is in power now and she wasn't in power 2 years ago. I don't buy that. You know, I can't really put my full energy. I'm not talking about making a film. I can make a great film about it, but actually going there and signing my daughter to a school there.
Sure, yeah.
I'd be too afraid of that.
Absolutely. It's one of my biggest worries about the idea. I've looked into it. There are lots of legal structures which will protect a ZA, for example, which is Prospera, one of these economic zones, mm-hmm. from a despot government coming in and just ransacking it, which is the kind of ultimate, you know, the ultimate form of destruction. And it would be an international incident at that point. That may cause some kind of sanctions on Honduras from other countries, you know. So
maybe.
Sure, maybe. And I've spoken to the Prosper is mainly Hondurans living and working there. Mm-hmm. And when I talk to them about it, they all say, yeah, you know what, we've lived with this prospect for our whole lives. What we're going to do is not do it. And they're doing everything they can. Because the current government in Honduras is the opposition to the government which basically passed the ZA law. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they're actually living now with the government saying, we don't like these things. Mm-hmm. We want to get rid of them. Mm-hmm. And they're not. They haven't managed to get rid of them yet.
Yeah.
They're fully legally protected for at least 50 years, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, but agreed. This is an interesting time we're living in, because I think these kind of ideas, like Bukele going against the World Bank and the IMF, you know, ZA's operating in an independent way, all these things are a result of the times we live in. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the internet allows these ideas to travel at the speed of light around the world. I mean, you mentioned Bukele answering to Bitcoiners. You know, without Twitter, mm-hmm. that wouldn't even happen. Mm-hmm. And I think from here, this is the time when all these things, people are really will really start experimenting with these ideas.
The world is ready for it. We have the resources to have a lot of free utopian cities all over the world. And I'm sure many people would love to go and live in them. I think it's...
You've got to start somewhere.
I don't want to sound anti-government here, but that is the problem with those things. It's not that the people are not ready for it and we don't have the resources for it. It's just structural powers don't want us to do that, you know? Or they want us to do it, but they don't want it to grow.
I think that depends on the government. I mean, as an economic zone, obviously... A government is incentivized and Prospera is a good example. It's attracted a lot of business into Prospera. Low tax rates. The government still take tax from them. Mm-hmm. They're still benefiting immensely from the existence of a zone like this.
No, absolutely. I mean, look at China, right? I mean, if we go into free economic zones, right?
Yes.
So they created an empire from the free economic zones.
Yeah. But I think this is the time when the experiment with independence, freedom, liberty, I think is definitely coming to a head. And I think El Salvador is another example of, it's why I often draw a connection between Free Cities and El Salvador, because the underlying sentiment, I think, is similar. It's a liberating process. It's something new. It's bucking the trend. It's bucking the traditional institutions. It's a lot of things. And as you saw yourself, it fills people with hope, and hope drives people a long way, in mm-hmm. my experience.
Absolutely. This is definitely a comment that I've received about the film over and over, that you can see the hope on the faces of the local people there. Like, people really tell me, it really shows that there are good things happening there. Well, I hope so. I honestly hope so. I hope I'm not gonna eat my own hat in a few years over that. But
me too. Hey, listen, I've got one last question. Like, what if you had a sabbatical of 1 year, mm-hmm. where everything was paid for? Mm-hmm. What would you do?
Oh, I don't know. That's such a beautiful question. Where would I go for a year? I'd say El Salvador. Honestly, I don't have this urge to go anywhere else around the world besides Central America right now. It's been like that since I stepped in El Salvador. So, I'll probably go back there and try to help with education. It's just like there's thirst for it, you know? It's like every person wants to ask you Bitcoin questions. It's like in the future, you know? Every person, and there's zero education, you know? Like, I mean, now there is a lot, but 2 years ago, there was no, just a 21 million cap, no one was aware of. Block time releases, no one was aware of. It's like all these things are, you got to go there. And I found myself just speaking to people for hours about Bitcoin and not getting bored of it, you know? It's like, I could never do that in London. In London, I don't mention the word Bitcoin. It's like,
Well, I'm glad you've mentioned Bitcoin here. That was and I urge anyone out to go out there and watch the film. I think it's a very good representation of a particular moment in the history of the Bitcoin experiment in El Salvador and how it affects real people. So thanks for talking, Toma.
Thank you.
And good luck with your next trip back there.
Yeah, thank you.